This week on RSBNB Update, we cover the essence of finality and the broach of the gods. We look at the top-end PVM use cases and changes to the PVM meta. And then, where should you use the broach of the gods? We also talk art, stories, and music nominations for the Golden Gnomes. This is RSBNB Update, episode 791, recorded Thursday, August 20th, 2020, Return of the Spec. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of RSBNB Update. We are here this week. We have a kind of a PVM update that's actually a crafting update in disguise, if you can call it a crafting update. Two new pieces of jewelry. Of course, we're talking about alchemical hydrix with that, and, you know, very powerful stuff. Very powerful. So to talk about these two new items is David, our resident PVM expert. Welcome back to the show. It seems like we're having you on more often than not this year.
Yeah, that's true. There have been a lot of very small PVM updates that have had significant impact this year, I feel like. But you know, because we haven't had a huge one, but we've had a lot of little ones.
Yeah, and who says PVM's left behind, right? I know that was a sense last year that the folks were trying to say. But nonetheless, we're going to get to the essence of finality and broach of the gods in just a bit. We also, of course, have patch notes, and we're going to go over the nominations for the 10th annual Golden Gnome Awards and provide some suggestions of who you might want to nominate with that. And, of course, your questions. Those of you guys watching on video, and maybe you guys might hear this difference.
Guy over here.
Yeah, I'm getting to you. Just wait.
Okay.
I'm just getting it to you. Just wait. You might notice that we have a bit of a different setup going on here, but I'll elaborate
more
on that.
You're all thrown off, aren't you? Shane?
Yeah, I'm all thrown off. If you guys are hearing this at the usual time, then that means I was successful. So yay for me on that. But of course, you just heard Tannis there. Tannis79 in game. Welcome back.
What's up, Shane? Sorry, I jumped a gun. I thought like you forgot me. I'm like, whoa, is he serious?
No, I thought that's what happens on Western Context. That's what happens on Western Context.
Okay.
I am Shane12088 in game. You can find David on his main at Cabru as well. So you ready to just dive right into this and talk about this? How are you feeling this week with this? Because I mean, you got these extra Reaper points as well. This week with this update, yeah, bonus.
You got
Reaper
extra
points.
Reaper points with it.
Yeah, 50% bonus Reaper points from the 17th to the 31st.
Well, hot damn, it's kinda.
That's for everyone. That's for everyone, though. To be clear, that's not like a. You don't get that for wearing the amulet or something.
No,
you just get everyone that for the next couple weeks.
That's what the poor people get for the next 2 weeks.
That's what the poor.
Hey, those Reaper points are worth a whole lot, though.
Yeah, they are now. They are now, of course, with this. We detailed the alchemical hydrix jewelry a bit last week, but just a quick recap on this. 117 invention needed to create the alchemical hydrix stone, requiring 1 hydrix, 50 fortunate, 50 refined, 10 precious, and 2 rumbling components. Of course, for those who don't PVM, rumbling is going to be the stumbling block. And for everybody out there who does clues, well, you're having a pretty good week this week. What did you say that fortunates were up to? Fortunate components?
You can slow buy most of them for between 1.7 and 1.9. But I think if you're selling them, you could easily get, you know, well over 2 mil per fortunate if you're willing to slow sell.
There you go. There you go. So that's how scalers can, of course, benefit from this update with fortunate components. And one way, we'll talk, of course, about Broach of the Gods, the skilling brooch/pocket item after. But, you know, the essence of finality, a recap on how this works for everybody. It is a new item that is an amulet, and when you equip it, you get to use a special attack that you have fed to it. I think the bonuses are, I think it's 56 to each combat style, right? That you get.
That's correct, which makes it the second best in the game. Of course, the best being the ornamental version,
okay,
which is 59.
Okay, so, a little bit on top, right? So,
yeah.
Now, you know, this does, of course, combine the benefits of the Amulet of Souls and the Reaper Necklace, which, I mean, is a good feature in itself, because previously, you know, you could only choose one of those to wear, right? Which one of those would you choose before, the Reaper Necklace or the Amulet of Souls to wear?
Mostly dependent on if you have 100% accuracy, obviously Souls is better. If you have below 100% accuracy and you didn't use too much food, then the Reaper Necklace was better. So it's just, you know, case dependent.
But now you get the best of both worlds.
You do. If they had stopped at that and given it nothing else, it would still be an incredible item and worth the price of admission. If it had no other effect, that would have been good enough.
Yeah. So now comes the big questions here. What do you think would be best to feed to the amulet to get as a special attack?
Well, first of all, let us not forget that you get 500 crafting XP for making this item, which I think that's it's really a skilling update if you look at it that way, because you get
you mean we get
500 XP for making it,
for making this, and we get a skilling brooch.
Yeah, exactly, it's exactly right.
Spoiled. I mean, I don't
yeah, know. And you know, that's why we'll talk about if the brooch is actually the skilling update. That's worth mentioning, because you know there's questions about whether it is or not, but that's topic for after. But what would you use with this? So assuming you were out and about, and I guess I should ask the question, have you actually invested in one of these already?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Okay.
I have one on both my main and my Iron Man.
What special attack did you feed to it?
Must have. Well, currently I'm using it as a flex amulet. So I don't have the kind of money to just own a bunch of these. And also, we don't have an option to recolor them. And I imagine that, in my opinion, they certainly should be recolorable. But anyways, I'm currently using the Guthic Staff for the Claws of Guthic special for when I'm doing something with magic. So
I think somebody mentioned that on last week's podcast as being one of the good ones that people might be interested in using. So that's good you picked that one up.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Post ABS nerf. It's certainly
Armadale Battle Staff, right?
Yes, Armadale, correct. Armadale Battle Staff. And we could get into that in a little bit. And then the other thing is there are a litany of dragon weapons that have fantastic special effects, but have not been useful since pre-EOC.
Uh-huh.
And
Dragon Great again.
And that's exciting.
Big Dragon Great.
Yeah, I mean, they really did. So I'm currently flexing between the Guthic Staff and the Dragon Dagger. I would say that a lot of the dragon weapons.
So does that
are
mean you haven't decided
choices?
Which one to that, put into it, or you have two?
No, it just means that when I'm using magic at a boss, I put in a Guthic Staff,
okay.
And when I'm meleeing a boss, I swap it out for a Dragon Dagger. It's just an additional little cost per hour. So Dragon Daggers are 30k, Guthic Staff is maybe 60k. And so you just burn 30k every time you go from meleeing a boss to maging a boss, essentially, if that makes
sense.
So
I want to ask,
so we got
how
some
is
weapon
the
diversity? Right? This is a weapon diversity project?
In a sense, yeah, it is. It's a weapon diversity project that just has like 180 mil price of admission. So yeah. Brilliant.
And how is the damage of that dragon?
I have 180 mil.
I have 180 mil.
Yeah, see, Shane has 180 mil. I mean, come on.
The Dragon Dagger is essentially like a second Hurricane. So the melee ability Hurricane, it hits your target twice for pretty high high amounts of damage.
And it's something like only 20 or 25% adrenaline to cast that, right?
Correct. 25% adrenaline, and there's no cooldown. So it really improves flexibility with Zerk rotation. So it does a few things that are interesting. The first is it gives you a lot more flexibility when you get relentless procs. So relentless being the perk that prevents adrenaline loss from thresholds or ultimates. Before, sometimes those procs were always nice, but sometimes they're kind of wasted. This means that you'll never waste a relentless proc because that saved adren can go towards just spamming out a very strong special attack. It also means that when you use Berserk without an adrenaline pot, it's now much stronger because you don't have to have 50% adrenaline to cast a threshold. So when you Zerk without an adren pot, it's like you're getting in an additional threshold because the Dragon Dagger is the strength of a threshold, essentially. It costs 25% adren instead of 15, but you could use it with 25 or more, whereas a threshold obviously requires 50 or more. And so it just really provides a lot of additional flexibility for melee rotations. Melee was already wildly strong, so this makes it even stronger than before. And the thing I like is that different players, I think, will have a different favorite special attack. The Dragon Longsword is also super popular.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not as big of a fan of the Dragon Longsword because...
How are the damage numbers on the Dragon Dagger one at tier 92, I assume you're operating?
So without Berserk Aura... With tier 92, the Dragon Dagger special over two hits. The reason I like it is because you'll never risk wasting damage by hitting way above 12k or way above 15k, depending on if you're using Grimoire. It's about 15.5k at max without Berserk Aura.
So it's 15.5k if you cast it four times.
No, once.
Oh, so 7,500 damage each.
So you do. Yeah, so right around 7,500 damage each if you are in a Berserk but not using Berserk Aura. And of course, the damage boosting ability of Berserk Aura doesn't stack with Berserk, but the level modulation does. So I'm not sure what it is exactly, but essentially it around 7.5k per hit. So it's like it's just a less hurricane because...
I wish people could see my face right now. Because, you know, I'm basically double face palming this. Because, I mean, Tanis. 7,500 damage times two in a spec. And
yeah.
And this was just with a tier 92 weapon. What other buffs did you have running at the time, just out of curiosity here?
I mean, Overload, tier 99 Prayer. Just, you know, the standard trend masterwork armor, just standard kind of best in slot gear, which, you know, luckily I have. But I will say on my Iron Man, I've been using this weapon and my best spec so far, and that account has, you know, almost nothing is best in slot except the amulet. That's actually my only best in slot melee item on my Iron Man. I hit a 7.2, 6.9 hit at Araxor today with my Dragon Dagger special attack. So even without best in slot stuff, and that account has regular overloads and the tier 95 prayer does not have tier 99 prayers yet. So even if you don't have a lot of the really high tier stuff, I mean, a 14k special is pretty gigantic, I think.
Well, I think our postulating last week that this is going to be a new era for power creep has been, you know, all but confirmed with this.
Oh yeah, certainly. And like I said, the Dragon Longsword is also a great choice. It does between 50 and 360% ability damage over one hit. I believe it could hit close to 15k with a single hit. And there, you know, some people might prefer that. I kind of like the two hits of the dagger. It also just has kind of an old school feel.
Right.
I mean,
I wonder if the prices of these are going to go up.
Special weapon of choice in like 2010.
Because, you know,
I can't imagine they do because you buy them in the shop.
Okay. Because I know I have a ton of dragon longsword sitting from Saren spirits and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, because you could buy them 10 at a time in shops.
Oh, 10 at a time. All right, fair enough.
Yeah, from the guy near the waterfall. Oh, you could buy it from there too. And then the dragon daggers you could buy for 30k a piece.
Right.
From the Rosello, something like that. I know it starts with an R. He's just northwest of the RD Lonestone.
Yeah, and then there's the dragon dagger, that's the reason you go to the Lost City for those ones, or dragon longsword.
Yeah. The dragon mace is also really good. So
yeah.
That's another option for people. There's something to be said about the dragon halberd as well. It's a little weirder to use because it puts your cleave on cooldown, which is your strongest basic, of course. But it could hit multiple enemies in a cone in front of you. So there could be some AoE situations where you'd want to be using the dragon halberd potentially.
Yeah.
But the point is just that there's just a lot of flexibility. My guess is there'll be some sort of a Dren Dump record rotation with Dragon Claw, because claws are the highest hitting.
Yeah, I was going to ask about those.
The potential ones, but they're 50% adrenaline.
Yeah.
So 50% is just way more than 25. So it's not that good for everyday situations. But my guess is that there'll be some record setting kills where people exploit the power.
You know, one thing, and I want to bring this up, and it's been said that this is in discussions internally if they're going to keep it this way, but if you have a lucky weapon, say a lucky godsword, you can just pop that godsword in and then reclaim it, and you can effectively, you know, with that, say you have a lucky armadillo godsword, you get free lucky armadillo, or you get free armadillo specs on that, then you can rotate it out.
Yeah, I was actually going to mention that next, because the Ceridoman Godsword is fantastic for a lot of Slayer situations.
Yep.
You just pop that on a Revolution bar. Say you're doing Salawa Ox or something like that, or Creatures of the Lost Grove. It's not as strong as the others because it's 50% adrenaline instead of 25, so it's not really like a bossing weapon. Although you could use it as a bossing weapon if you want to just like kind of very casually do God of War's Dungeon 2 kills. Like I could see it being awesome at Hellware, for example, or at Grigorovich. A lot of people kind of struggle with Grigorovich slightly. I think that it improve casual kills a lot.
Shame.
Really, like it's awesome for Slayer. So my hope is that they'll keep it that way. Because essentially it's just, it completely becomes unviable if they take away the lucky one,
because
it's like 10 mil for a Sarah God sword. And so you would basically have to commit to purchasing an amulet just to be a Slayer amulet. And I just don't know, that people that it's going to be worth it to spend 180 mil for an item that's basically just for Slayer. Like, I don't know when.
No, I wouldn't ever make. I think.
Yeah,
that's
silly. Right. Exactly. But right now it heals you for like 4k and restores most of your prayer. So it just makes Slayer tasks. It basically turns semi AFK Slayer into click once every 5 minutes Slayer. So I guess if that makes sense to you, that's what I would say the utility of that.
What about the Stadius Warhammers? I know that was another one we were theorizing about last week.
Yeah. So most people, myself included, right now, my Stadius Warhammer is at like 93% or something. So I'm in no rush to put it in an amulet. But once my Warhammer is down to like 3 or 4%, I'll put it into an amulet. And I'll have to buy a second one. So I think most people will have two amulets, one amulet that's a flex amulet between their dragon weapon of choice and Guthic staff, depending on what they're doing.
Right.
And then a second, correct. And then a second one that is always a hammer. And you could actually make the loadout work easily because you just make your flex one, ornamental. and then your hammer amulet non-ornamental. So then when you load a preset,
it'll know what to pull.
Right. And it's a godsend for Iron Man. So I'm very excited about that because, you know, something I was worried about is just like, it takes a long time for Iron Man to get a hammer. And now once you get one, you'll never have to get a second, which is kind of cool. Hammer prices have dropped. They're about $430 to $450 before this. I think they're around like $310. I think they're around $310 now. It's like one of the single biggest drops, I've ever seen in the game's history. The hammer drop, that is.
All right. I will talk more about specific cases of what weapons to use after. Now, how much does this change the meta of PVM, would you say? Because I know earlier in the week you were thinking that, you know, this might be a more important upgrade than going from tier 90 to tier 92 weapons, for example.
Yeah, I think that's easily the case. So I headed to Telos on my main shortly after buying this with Guthic Staff. And I have Inquisitors on there and Best in Slot Everything. But I think even without Best in Slot Everything, you'd be totally fine. I went to Phase 5. I killed minions. Okay, so I killed the minions with a tsunami, which is what you normally do. And then I used Sunshine in the Green Beam. And the Green Beam, of course, like, you know, pumps you full of adrenaline. And the only thing I did was hit the Guthic Staff special over and over and over. And that's all I had to do to get a Telos skill. So I just hit the Guthic Staff special. And most people find P5 to be the really hard part because it's kind of a complicated rotation. I didn't use a single ability other than Sunshine, Tsunami to kill the minions, and then just Guthic Staff over and over and over and over. And I hit between 11 and between 10 and 12K every single hit. And then in Red Beams, Guthic Staff special now hits 15K because I was using a Grimoire too when I was testing it. But you easily can hit 15Ks with Guthic Staff. And before, obviously, it was a tier 60 weapon. Now it's a tier 97 weapon because you're using it with Inquisitors. And there's no cooldown, so you could just keep spamming it over and over and over again.
So in general, I guess the sense is that this is the new best in slot, and it's more important than going from tier 90 to tier 92.
Yes, I would say if you've got tier 90 gear and you've got a couple hundred mil and you're deciding whether to upgrade to, say, Praisals or get this, I would say get this, and I don't think it's particularly close. I would say the tier 99 prayer is a better upgrade. Although even that's debatable, honestly. I would say it's that level of good. It's right in the range of the upgrade of tier 95 to tier 99 prayer. And I think debatably it's even better than that. And for its price, I mean, it's dirt cheap for how good it is. Like, tier 92 weapons range from 550 mil to a bill. This thing is like 200 mil. Which is nothing. And prayer, the codexes for the prayers are like 600 mil. So this is like a really huge upgrade for the price, even though 200 mil might sound like a lot, but like compared to how good it is, it's like nothing.
Ay, ay, ay. All right. You can tell where my next question after this one's going to go. But Switchscape, what does this do to Switchscape? Because I know last year when we were around this time, actually, looking at the weapon diversity beta when that came out, there were some interesting things in there. But the number one problem that added to the game was more weapon switches and more switches that you're going to need to bring to a fight. So we talked about having two, you know, having a very powerful Essence of Finality and having a Flex Amulet or Essence of Finality. Do you think people are going to have more than two? And is this going to be a problem for Switchscape?
I initially thought perhaps, but it actually kind of fixes some of Switchscape in a really creative way because it causes the Switchscape to exist pre-boss fight instead of inside of the boss fight. So you switch from your dagger to your staff or whatever before the fight starts. You don't have to do the switches in the arena. It's actually way easier to Guthic Staff special because before, you had to equip the Guthic staff and then hit special attack. Now you just hit one ability. So it went from two inputs to one input to G staff spec. And if you're like me, want to maintain your Aftershock stacks, it was like really difficult and took me hours of practice to master switching to a Guthic staff without losing Aftershock stacks. And I actually wrote an article about that for Informer, that thing specifically. But anyways, that's a thing of the past because you will never lose Aftershock stacks. So it actually lowers Switchscape because for a lot of these weapons, which normally would require clicking the weapon and then using the special, now you just get to use the special straight off.
Now, was that something that a lot of the higher level PBMers knew? Like, is this pretty common knowledge? Is this something that, you know, might have been brought up in, you know, a small group setting, perhaps?
Which element are you referring to?
Well, that sounds like PBM quality of life. I'm just like, who do we know?
I would say it's like
was all about PBM.
Very widely. I would say it's like very widely known. Like I think the Guthic staff special in particular is like one of the most popular special attack weapons has been for since 26. It gained notoriety following the release of Invention when it was used for the first non-bug Duo Virago kill phase five buff. And so it ever since then it's been part of everyone's loadout. And now they've taken something that was somewhat tedious to use, although obviously you get used to it over time, and they just seamlessly integrated it as an ability. So I actually think, yeah. Hammer, on the other hand, is a little different because hammering with a different style now requires an additional input, right?
Right. And that's something didn't say in the start of this, but we talked about last week, is that if you want to use a magic special attack, you need to be wielding a magic weapon.
Right. So using special attacks of a different style now requires more effort. You know, if you're going to the trouble of using a weapon of a different style, to me, you're already willing to put in a lot of effort. And, you know, just adding one extra input isn't too big of a deal. I think on balance, this reduces Switchscape in the majority of cases.
All right. That's not the answer I was expecting, but that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think so. It really makes achieving high levels of damage more accessible than it ever has been.
Okay. One more thing before we move on to the skilling option in air quotes. I will determine if it's worth saying air quotes or not in just a moment. But the question I have is that obviously this is new power creep coming into the game, because it's making everyone more powerful with, you know, no real downsides except for maybe some cost on the front, I guess you could say. Because there doesn't seem to be any downsides to this, is there?
Yeah, and given that a max loadout PVM preset is going to run you like 12 to 14 mil an hour to use, adding an extra 30k for your Dragon Dagger is like pocket change. It's like hardly even noticeable. So once you buy the amulet itself, there's really no cost to it.
Well, you do have to recharge it with Hydrix.
Oh, that's true. You're right. It actually does have a cost, but they changed it from a Hydrix charging it twice to charging it four times, right?
Yeah.
Or five times, or is it five times?
You would have had to use it five times, and I think they're taking it down to make it less. I don't know if that's in-game yet.
Yeah.
That'll probably be in the coming week.
I think it is. I think they cut the recharge cost by more than half, I think.
Yeah.
So it's really not that, given how good it is, it's not that bad. And like I said, even if all it did and the Amulet of Souls and Reaper necklace in increased style. Like if none of this weapon spec stuff even existed, it would still be worth the cost, in my opinion.
Yeah. All right. To repair it, the amulet can be repaired by 50% using one dust. So you only need to use two dust to repair it to 100%.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Now, the question I have with this is, you know, we talked about power creep before numerous times. Can the game sustain this? Because it seems like what the goal is with this, like Tanis, you were saying, it's to make somebody like you, after this comes down a bit in price, be able to take something like this and go do a Raxor easier than you could before. It just seems to be bringing down the barrier to entry on PVM if somebody has the money to invest in one of these. And the question is, can the game sustain this?
Yeah, I mean, this is par for the course for their approach to PVM the last couple of years, which has been no new content that increases difficulty. The last time we got a boss where you could reasonably say it was a difficulty increase was Solak.
And I think they said that's as high as they'd likely go.
Right, Solak, and then you know, Telos 1000 in Rage is what they've said. And they've said that a bunch of times, was 1K in Rage Telos was what they imagined the most difficult thing to do. And I don't know if you've noticed, but a lot of people have 4K in Rage now, like a ton. Like if you go to World 48 Use, there's always like 10 people with 4K in Rage.
Yeah, and I mean, I've seen those fly by before, but... I guess what I'm getting at here is, where do we go next with this? I mean, are we going to have to eventually at some point in a, you know, maybe 3 years or so, bring down the power of everything in game, or what's going to happen? I don't know.
I mean, nerfs are so unpopular that it's hard to imagine them doing that. But to me, they just have to change their mind about increasing the power of bosses. It really, they haven't increased the difficulty of PVM in 4.5 years. Yet every few months we get a new item that is a significant power boost.
Well, just look what archaeology did.
It's becoming exactly. And it's becoming a big problem. I mean, the upside is that PVM has never been more accessible. The downside is, bosses are becoming like butter, which, you know, I think takes away the part of the enjoyment of PVM, which is that it is really hard.
I think it's going to be one of those delicate dances that needs to be done, where there's always an eye on, you know, is this thing too powerful, or are we having too much of one item in the game? Because, you know, you can increase the ease of these bosses, but when you do that, they bring more of their materials in game. So then you need to look at the other side of that and make it so that the people who are using these materials are going to need to buy up more of them. And, you know, last skill that we saw was effectively an item sink was invention that did that. So, I mean, it makes PVM easier, yes, but it puts them, and I don't know, you tell me if you agree with this, it seems to put them in a position where they're always going to need to look at the economy and see, you know, do we have too much of this in game? Do we need to make an update that sucks this out? Or do we need to, you know, make it so that it's less easy to get that item? Which, I mean, if it's an item that comes into game through PVM, that's not happening anymore, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I think power creep has been out of control for years now. I don't think this is the straw that breaks the camel's back, okay, in the sense that like the camel has like 14 broken vertebrae already. Like breaking the 15th, I don't think makes that big of a difference. Power creep is already so overwhelming that, like, it just, I don't, you know, I don't know if I'm like communicating my point clearly, but like basically I think that the cat's out of the bag on power creep already, so it's kind of whatever. I think the only solution at this point is to either release much more difficult content or significantly nerf some things. And I don't think either of those are going to be very popular.
All right. We'll leave it at that then with the essence of Finality Tanis. You have anything else regarding this powerful amulet? Maybe not overly broken.
So what you're saying, David, is there's power creep?
Yeah. Yeah. But I think that's like, I don't think it's power creep that makes, I think that the situation was already so bad in terms of power creep that it doesn't really matter that much. Like, I think we're past the point of no return anyways. So have at it, I guess.
I got you. I'm kind of messing around, but isn't there something to be said for, like, I know when I play certain games, I want to feel like I'm a badass. And every little thing that makes me feel that much more powerful and being able to do that much more damage, or that's like, I mean, it's power creep, but it's also kind of a power fantasy, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, that's why they keep doing this, because like these updates are fun. They're really popular. Like seeing just huge stacks of damage is really fun. Even the Armadale Battlestaff bug, which we didn't really explain. It was fun to watch videos of that. I wish I had been awake to use it, because it was just hilarious. So yeah, I agree. I think power creep is fun.
Has that bug been patched?
Oh yeah, I think it was fixed.
Okay, what was it then?
They realized. Yeah, so the way it worked was the Armadale Battlestaff just lets you attack five times in a row in rapid succession. That's its special attack. The way it worked was you had one amulet with the Armadale Battlestaff and a second amulet with a different special. So Guthic Staff was one option, or Miasmic Barrage the tier 88 staff from the wilderness, from Revenants. Is it Vesta's?
I don't know.
So that's spear. The spear. Vesta's the spear. Anyways, it was the staff. Basically, you would use one amulet, cast Armadale Battlestaff, immediately switch to your other amulet, say it's, you know, your Guthic Staff, and then it would just instantly cast five Guthic Staff specials.
Oh,
so
my.
You would use the Armadale Battlestaff and then do...
Yes.
Yeah, so like Evil Lucario did this with the Miasmic Barrage at 4K in Rage Telos and did like 300,000 damage in 5 seconds or something. It was just really funny. On the Barrage, and it worked for the AoE as well.
Yeah.
Just clear. Rapid fired a special for like, and for no adrenaline cost as well, by the way. It wasn't like it was 5 25% charges in a row. It was 5 Guthic Staff specials at once for no adrenaline cost, or for the cost of one.
Yeah. And we're also forgetting about the fact that this amulet has the passive effect of allowing Soul Split to have a 50% chance to heal 25 to 50% more. It also increases the base damage reduction, protection and deflection prayers by 10%, which gives them a 60% total reduction.
Okay, so I totally forgot to mention this. Do you all know about like the Berserkers, how like the Berserker relic is the best relic that makes you do more damage if you have lower HP?
Yeah.
Okay, so I was taking such little damage at Telos that I turned off my protection prayer to purposely let him damage me, because he couldn't hit me hard enough because of this amulet. So I wasn't able to take advantage of my relic because the boss like couldn't hurt me. So that was really funny.
What in range was
like,
that at?
Relatively low, like 300, 400, that kind of range. Obviously, at like 4K, this makes a big difference. But also, like, camping high in rage at Telos got hugely easier. So I totally forgot about that. I was really glad that you mentioned it. Because, once again, if that was the only thing... Basically, like, this amulet has a bunch of different effects, where if that was the only effect and it did nothing else, it would be worth its price. And that's one of them. Like, I think if the only thing it did was make the Amulet of Souls effect stronger, that alone would have been good enough.
Yeah, and you mentioned that, you know, and that's why I'm calling it very, very powerful. So
that's super, super important. I totally forgot. Super important you mentioned that, because that is a huge buff as well.
Yep. All right. Let's talk about the Brooch of the Gods, the skilling side of this, because there is that side too. I don't know.
Allegedly.
I don't know if anybody feels happy about this one. Recapping this, you can store up to 1,000 of each urn in the Brooch. Portable skill station effects are twice as likely to trigger. Skill distraction effects are enhanced. And divine blessings can occur, which give you invention components. And the skilling distraction effects are a XP boost for artisan's workshop pipes, a ceremonial sword XP boost, deep sea fishing hub XP boost, chronicle fragment boost when hunting, 20% chance extra to receive bird's nest and divine eggs while woodcutting. Fire spirits will have their rewards increased by 25%. Rockertunities will get a +1 multiplier, and sprite focus at 100% will get a +1 multiplier as well. And those are the crickets in the back room, folks. 140-odd million for that.
Yikes.
You ever seen Goodfellas, Shane?
No.
Ah, you never seen that where Joe Pesci walks in the room? You've seen it, David, right? I mean.
Yes. Yeah. Continue.
This is what. Where Joe Pesci, Gilling, just walked into a room and got hit. We got whacked, Shane. We got whacked.
That's something also related to the pick of the week later, as I've been told as well. But
close enough, Shane.
close enough. Dude, what is up with this? Like this?
It also provides a +4 prayer bonus.
Well, I can put away my Dragon Rider cape now. Shit. Shane, never ever trust the Cambridge Mafia. Trust nobody. Last week he said, "In Timbo we trust." No, trust nobody. They just marched you in a room and whacked you.
More free overloads is nice. That's good. You know, I don't understand this. Like, I don't know why they were afraid of making it really good, because they clearly had no fear. They were just like, but it was like,
it provides 4 uncommon or rare materials of a single type.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of cute, because like, if you're going for 5.4 all, no, just hear me out for a second here. If you're going for 5.4 all, it's worth buying, because my guess is it'll come close to paying for
components. Well, better at that price. So much.
Yeah, so like, maybe if you bought this amulet and then you skilled for like 500 or 600 hours, then like, it'll probably pay.
Much is it?
I don't know, 140s?
Like 140-ish, yeah. Right at 140.
Give me one reason why I wear this instead of my Grace of the Elves.
Well, you don't need to choose.
You wear both.
This goes in the pocket slot.
Yeah. You lose out on your scrimshaw. And most of the skilling scrimshaws, but there are a couple that are good, I think.
The tree shaking one is good.
Yeah, I mean, you're running them any regardless of how good they are. Usually, you're going to be running them skilling anyway.
Yeah. I mean, free Illyjanken. Well, not free, because you're paying 140 mil. But the chance of getting Illyjonkin components, Noxious components, stuff like that. I mean, that's decent,
but no,
I guess.
But that comes from scavenging, too. I mean, if you got, you're running around with your weapon on you, you're always scavenging.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
I guess can't justify
the portable cost one is nice. It's it's.
Let's talk about the portable one. Good point. We should talk about tying a 140 mil item like this to MTX. Is that the direction we thought we would be going in going into the fall of 2020?
Well, your portable brazier, just to recap this, when you gives you a 10% chance that you'll save a log. Your portable crafter, 10% chance to save a hide or a clay. Your portable Fletcher does similar things. The portable range gives you a 5% chance at not burning food, which, I mean, I don't know. Or, sorry, doubling it. Which, I mean, okay. Portable sawmill? Eh?
But it saves you some... Oh, the sawmill. Yeah, you're right. I'm just kidding.
The herbaler one, all types of potions. 10% more herbaler XP and a 5% chance of creating an extra potion. But yeah, and, you know... We talk about this, of course, and the microtransactions side of this, and you know, I think most people buy their portables on the Grand Exchange, so somebody else is bringing them in, so it's really not that big of an issue for me. But you know, this is kind of like last week's update with the portable workbench, in that you know, this is something that could have been, you know, fashioned into some kind of distraction and diversion with the portable workbench. You know, go make some flat packs at some point around the world, and it changes every 20 minutes for a buff on XP, and the chance of doubling it. I mean, you could have something like that in-game as well. Now, the question, of course, is that do you want to tie this into these kind of treasure hunter items that are sitting on top of Skilling when... You could have done something else with this, you know?
Could have made it brought in through Skilling. Like, this, by all rights, portables probably should be an invention item at this point, right?
Yeah.
Obviously. It's shocking that they're not, right?
Yeah, no. And if that was the case, then I don't think that would be that bad. And, I mean, and obviously, Shane, you're right. When it comes to, like, the economy and stuff, most people are going to be buying their stuff through the exchange.
Yeah.
I get that. I don't think it's a big impact there, but once again, this gives the appearance, it's the wrong appearance. It's the wrong, you're giving people the wrong impression when you do little things like this. Like, cause this is a kind of a little thing, but when you didn't give us anything else, and this is the best thing on the new jewelry for the brooch, naturally your attention's drawn to it, right? Like,
yeah,
and you go,
and, you know,
oh, well, this don't look right.
Remember Skilling offhands? I'm trying to find the dog on.
Where'd that...
That was something that Shawnee prototyped before I left, but it hasn't been... Well,
apparently he took it with him. He took some thumb drives. He pulled a Snowden or some shit. We're gonna see that come over. A Bethesda or something's gonna be... having like
Skilling offhand to the Elder Scrolls.
There's just so many different things that they could have done for this when it came to Skilling, right? They could have done something like a Skilling offhand, so to speak. But instead we get this, which, I mean, sure, it's interesting, but really, I don't know.
I think it's interesting.
I just feel like it was a bizarre choice to me to make all the random buffs to making Skilling distractions better. I just think that nobody would have felt it was overly powerful if they just made actual skilling training better. So like the ceremonial swords buff, like why not just make Artisan's Workshop give 1% more XP? Like if they just made it so, you know, the wisdom aura that's like 2.5% more XP for an hour a day. Like if they had just done like 1.5% more XP at each of like at Deep Sea Hub, 1.5% more XP at Artisan's Workshop. Like, does anyone think that that would be too strong? Like,
no.
Basically, just make it a torso. Basically, they would just make it torso sticks, right? Like torso sticks that only work at specific locations that have a high upfront cost but no upkeep. To me, that would have been totally fine, and like everyone would have been like, "This is an awesome update." Maybe it makes skilling easier, but like, you know, I don't know. Like, I just think it could have been way better, and it would not have been out of balance.
I think that's the problem when you think about maybe they were worried about a certain audience on the skilling side who are like, it's almost like they fear the PVM and they disdain the skillers.
They should have zero reason to fear PVM when, you know, the bulk of that last player advocacy group who provided direct input were PVM folks.
Well, right, but PVM doesn't react to OP items the way that some people do in the skilling community. Like, they will throw, holy shit, this, it's too fast, the rates are too high, and those are people in skilling community, you know, whereas I don't think David hears a lot of that, you know. I think they're like, hey, dude, get that amulet, let's go shake this money tree for a minute, you know, so.
I think you're right.
Is that the case?
And getting back to basics on this, this is just a really boring design.
Yeah. Yeah, putting everything else aside is boring.
It also should have just not been pocket slot. Like that was just a bad choice, I think.
Well,
they couldn't interfere with Grace of the Elves. See that?
But if
they did that, then they have to interfere with Luck of the Dwarf.
No, they just make it a quiver slot.
But then you couldn't have your quiver.
Or not quiver ammo. Just make it an ammo slot. I mean, you don't need quiver. Like the brooch has prayer bonus. So you would just be like swapping out the quiver prayer bonus
right.
for brooch prayer bonus.
Oh, that is right. Yeah. Yeah. I see. I gotcha.
Yeah.
Slam. Like there are just a lot of things they could have done to make it so that there weren't trade-offs. I think that's the problem, really. Is that the PVM item has zero downside.
Yep.
Whereas this item, as like, even if someone thought like, okay, people are overly concerned, like this item's fine. Need to be better. Everyone is wrong. So whatever.
But
even
saying,
if that's true. Yes. Sorry. You go on, Tanis.
Well, What you're saying then is like, then by all rights, the brooch in theory is balanced correctly, and it's the
PVM one that's too powerful. Yeah, and you know they didn't.
But you see the problem though.
Like,
if you
remember
balance
what
it correctly? It's boring. It's slow.
Right.
It sucks.
But
it's
remember
not
what
fun.
What David said like 10 minutes ago. He said that if the PVM Essence of Finality didn't have the special attack feature, it would still be an instant
still be
buy.
Worth it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that would have brought them closer together without a doubt. You know, at the same time, like, I was only half joking when I'm saying that brought in weapon diversity. So I mean,
yeah.
I actually think it was a good thing for.
But I just want to be honest with everybody here and say that if I was going for 200 mil mining or 120 mining, I would get this for the raw opportunities, and I like the sprite focus boost. The rest of them are kind of worthless, but those two on their own, I think, on the skilling side, are good.
I mean, if you have that kind of money laying around where, you know, I mean, like, maybe if you hit a hit a die on a clue and you're like,
oh no. I
maybe.
Well,
but so I have a question for you, Shane. So yeah. I don't disagree with the premise of what you're saying, but let's not forget that rocker tunities only apply for in the context of tuner mill mining. That's just for Animica. So yeah. If you're doing Animica for mining, you're trying to make money.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah.
Right. So if you're trying to get max XP, obviously you're doing either Alea Crablets or Saren Stones. If you're going for mining, or if you're going for money, you're going to do Animica. So spending 140 mil on an item that is only a buff for the 3 mil an hour money making method, like to me, that seems like, once again, just not good enough.
What about the archaeology one?
200 mil mining. So yeah, I mean, that one is good.
Focus multiplier at 100%.
Yeah, I mean, I would say if you're going for 200 mil archaeology, that one's like pretty solid. I mean, again, I think it's worth getting. I just think that it could have been a lot better, and it would have been no issue whatsoever.
Yeah,
like making it a ammo slot item and just giving it more buffs. I hope that they'll continue to add enough little buffs that eventually it becomes really good. Because I think that it'd be totally fine, and I don't think anyone would complain if they decided to just add a bunch of stuff to it.
Right, and you know the woodcutting one on this is, you know, garbage because it's plus 25%, and this is going in the pocket slot, but your scrimshaw also goes in the pocket slot. That increases your chance of getting nests and geodes by 300%. So, yeah. How do we feel about that on the woodcutting side?
Yeah, yikes.
I feel like if I had 140 mil, there's so many more better ways to spend my money.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to get it on my Iron Man because it's like it's nice to be able to farm components while skilling.
Yeah. And, I mean, we don't have any data yet on how rare the rares are with this. And that could, like you said, if you're going for a 120, make it pay for itself over time.
Yeah, I think if you're going for 120 all, then it'll easily pay for itself over time.
And perhaps that is the reason why you buy this.
Yeah, because the Ilyushankin components are 10 mil a piece. Noxious components are like 15 mil a piece or whatever.
Right.
So maybe they're less than that. I don't know. There are several components that are like at least 5 mil. Fortunates, they're at least 2 mil now. So
yeah,
there are a lot of components that are really good. And so it'll pay for itself if you're going for 120 all, 5.4, something like that. But if you're just going for a max cape, it's hard for me to imagine if your goal is 99 all that this is even close to worth.
Yeah.
And but you if know, you're going for 120 all.
And, you know, just based on the fact that I don't do PVM and I'm not going to have, you know, these items and whatnot flowing through my bank, this is actually making more and more sense for me to buy or make just for the divine blessing aspect of it. And don't shoot me for this, but I think that is the selling point. And as we talk about it more, I am selling myself on buying it.
See, yeah, I still wouldn't buy it. I mean, I think if you could make it, maybe you can make a case for it if you have the stuff laying around, because you do clues or and you do a little PVM, so you got your, you know, I feel like you make a case to make it. But
yeah, I mean, also on my Iron Man, it only took me a day to farm the fortunate components, so yeah, it's not that bad. I know you said rumbling is somewhat of an issue, but
yeah, it would be for a skiller. Let's just
yeah. But if you get a main hand Drygor and augment it and then disassemble it, main hand Drygor is around 20 mil. I mean, you get about 16 components from that, or a tecton. I don't know what'd be better, that or a tectonic mask.
All right, let's math this out here. if you're just doing herb farming. So a toad flax is worth 10,175. And you get on average, you know, if you're fully kitted out, you get it on average about 12 per patch. And we have 7 patches in game, of course. So that's 854,000 per. And a toad flax seed only goes for 4,200 each. So let's just round that down. Or let's just do 4,200. So 854K minus 4,200 times 7. You're making on average 825K per herb run. And let's say you did 5 herb runs a day. That's 4.1 mil a day if you were to buy this. And the price that we were looking at for the alchemical Hydrix was 115. So, I mean, if you really wanted to, I mean, you could farm this in, you know, 3 to 4 weeks based on how things go. Literally farm it.
Yeah, I mean, they are higher now.
But, I mean, it's feasible. It's just a question of if you want to.
I think if you're going for more than one skill to 200 mil, and if it's a gathering skill, it definitely makes sense to buy it.
Yeah.
Because doing a couple hundred hours of fishing, wood cutting, mining, whatever it is, it'll pay for itself. Now, the problem is that if you're a skiller only, what are you going to do with those Illyjonkin components? What are you going to do with those Noxious components? That's the issue, though, Shane. It's like,
yeah,
it's not like you could sell them on the Grand Exchange.
Yeah.
The only reason that they're good is that they save you money on a best-in-slot perk, but do you even care about the best-in-slot perks?
Probably not, and we know how easy it is now with archaeology to get the old best-in-slot.
Or the new non-best-in-slot cheap perks, which are better than the old best-in-slot, which cost basically free by comparison. So, I mean, PVMers are willing to pay a bill for like a 2% upgrade, but I don't know if skillers are. So like that's the other problem with it, with the only money making element being components, is that if you're not both a skiller and a PVMer, it's not actually a money maker because those components are useless.
So it sounds like if you're looking for a way and you're primarily a skiller, but you're eventually looking to, you know, get some of those best in slots, and this could help move down the cost of those. But if you're just a skiller, I mean, you're probably better off saving your money, I guess. So, all right. I don't think there's anything else I need to say on this. I think we've challenged our assumptions, and what we have found is exactly as we were anticipating on this, you know, in some cases, less so. We were thinking that the essence of finality would be a little bit more broken than it is. And we kind of knew that, you know, we really can't find a use case for the brooch of the gods. So I'll ask the listeners out there, if you guys do have a use case for those, let us know. I think I'd be interested to hear that. How about you guys?
Of course.
I mean, I want to end it on just because, like, I think this item is good. I just think that it's too balanced, and I think that, yeah, I just think that if this had come out on its own and we hadn't gotten the amulet, I think we're having a different tone than this.
Yeah, you're entirely right on that. It's being tainted by what we saw previously.
It's been a while since there's been an update that's been massive for PVM, and skilling got kind of shafted, and I feel like that bitter taste is like coming back up. But for the, just because like it that hasn't been the case the past couple years, I think skilling updates have been generally awesome. So this is the first time in a while where I've had the feeling like, oof, why'd they do that?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think in general, they've been doing an awful.
All right.
I would call it a good update just because of the finality.
Yeah.
I mean, the finality makes it a good update in and of itself.
Yeah, you're entirely right on that. And you know what we can do with that? Like the very fact we, as people who are, let's just say, beginner PVMers, could have something to use the essence of finality for once we, you know, get the cost of it around our heads. That makes it a good update. It's a good update for all. We're just going to have to keep doing that power creep dance as we move forward in time. So
hopefully we can creep up there close enough so I can kill something before it gets nerfed or what have you.
Yeah. Ay, ay, ay. All right. Let's move on to the patch notes for this week. A couple of changes for the mobile client. A new setting has been added, which enables the multiple item drops interface to appear for single drops. So the drop log collector, if you want that, I guess, since we can do that on desktop. You enable this in the loot system menu found within the item drops menu and check to always use loot inventory. For desperate measures, you must now be in the encounter to start a wave during the Dino Stampede. I think we talked about that as being a issue when we were talking about the quest over the past few weeks, so that's good. Carapac now faces the player when addressing them. Saren will no longer appear outside the heart after the completion of Desperate Measures. Customization-wise, lots for how we dress our characters. The pith helmet will no longer cause certain sections of selected hairstyles to appear patchy. Male characters will no longer appear to have a hole in their head. While combining the assassin walk override with the Pristina's noble hair.
I love patch notes like these because I love random bugs that people find. I think that's so fun.
Yeah. Patches at the back of the female character's Firewatch legs have been filled in. The Deathcon t-shirt will no longer change your skin tone. Wearing the Shadow Reef diver outfit with the Nautilus torso will no longer cause small orange polygons to appear on the player's skin. Close-cropped hair no longer clips through the blue beret. The lion belly will no longer leave an opening in the body area. And the Shadow Dragoon helmet will now move at the same time as the player character's head. Now on to other fixes for this week. Mandrith's chat head has been updated and the static effect has been removed. After collecting all the required ore in Doric's quest, you'll now be directed to Doric himself, not the dwarf in mine, as the next step of the quest. That's an interesting one, considering how old that quest is. Wonder when that cropped in. Updated the skill guide tooltip for the invention charge drain reduction to state that the reduction does not affect invention devices. Changed wording and formatting a pop-up messages while attempting to enter a full world or leaving the queue to enter a world. The Globetrotters outfit set can now be used once again to complete emote clues with items kept in hidey holes. Yay, that's very important this week. Updated the description of the magic shield bow special attack. Tuska's Wrath now properly deals damage to the Firewatch. Disguised robbers in the heist minigame can no longer be identified by hovering the cursor over their models. Ooh, that's interesting. I guess that's that object outlining that we got after archaeology came out. It's no longer possible to walk into multiple rocks inside the Araxide Hive. It's also no longer possible to duplicate clan vexes and clan cloaks by continuously giving them to a fellow clan member already in possession of these items. Sammy's left eye is now correctly displayed without stretching after completing the fight arena quest. You'll also no longer float when walking over a bridge in the troll cave north of Berthorpe. Players will no longer be able to keep building big game hunter hotspots after dropping the required item from their inventory. When loading into a sinkhole dungeon, your action bar will now correctly correspond to the attack style you'll be using, assuming you have your action bar binding set up. David, is this a feature you use, action bar bindings?
Definitely.
Okay. Fixed an issue with missing Bloodweed and Elder Seeds in the Seed Aside configuration panel. And the big one, this was hotfixed last week. Iron accounts can no longer interact with portable workbenches.
Wild.
Oopsie daisy.
What?
We learned that one on the roundtable, didn't we?
We did. Mm-hmm.
Which is yikes. That's a big oops.
It's a really big oops.
Yeah. And fix of the week, ducks will no longer swim through the banks of the River Lum. And that's their category.
Time, haven't they?
Yeah, they have. They have. And I guess it's just the way the water model works. But that's the patch notes this week. Not too much to write home about. I think the biggest thing was probably the Iron Man portable workbenches fix. But nonetheless, let's do some community outreach here, because nominations for the 10th annual Golden Gnomes are now open. There will be a Golden Gnome ceremony this year, despite there being no RuneFest, and they want your nominations for Golden Gnomes. There will be a video category, a streaming category, an art category, all of which will be put up to public vote, and then a community category chosen exclusively by Jagex. You need to have your nominations in place until or by August 30th at midnight UTC. And you know, all the categories are what we'd expect. Best new video creator, best new old school video creator, best video creator for both, best RuneScape video, best old school video, streaming categories, best new streamer for both games and best streamer for both games. Then the art category, which has seen an expansion this year to include best new RS artist, best new old school artist, best RS artist, best old school artist, best RuneScape artistic creation, best old school and RuneScape artistic creation, and best cosplay creation. And I actually want to talk about some of these in this category, because this is actually really important category. It's a category that's evolving, and you know, it's something that is new, and you know, we have a wide breadth of people here at RSBNB Update. We of course have people like David. We of course have our insane skilling crew like Brew, who we talked about archaeology with after it came out. But we also do have an eye into the art community, and we were talking about this, and Diana had some really good artistic recommendations that you guys should check out. And, you know, I encourage everybody to nominate these people that we're going to talk about, because some of these things that are here are just truly amazing. First things first, I want to talk about Sax Spieler. And what she's done is, you know, created a whole bunch of pieces of art. And I'm showing some of these off right now on the video version of the show. But if you're on the audio version, just check them out in our full show notes at update.rsbnb.com. Truly, truly impressive pieces of work here for this. So, I mean, if you want to nominate Sax Spieler for this art, or perhaps even for, you know, cracking cosplay back at RuneFest 2019, you can do that as well. And, you know, I have to say that some of these things that I've seen in this category are just truly astounding on this. And, you know, I think the thing that people always think of when it comes to the Golden Gnomes, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong on this, is that everybody always focuses on the streamer, right? The streamer who gets the best PVM streak, or the streamer who does the most absurd thing at old school RuneScape. But the art community is something that we really don't hear too much about, and I think it's important to put a big, big focus on the art community for this. What do you guys think?
Absolutely.
I'm really happy that you're using your platform to shout them out, because they do incredible work and are a really big part of our community. So thank you for doing that.
Yeah. And, you know, big credit to Diana for sourcing these artistic pieces and showcasing them to the world on this. So once again, that's Zach Spieler for Best RS3 Artist, and writer too, who's been active in the art community for many years at this point. So just if you want to see what pieces she has put together, just check it out at update.rsbnb.com. It'll be in the show notes for this episode. Next, we also have a musical composition, which would fall under Best New Artist. And, you know, we often think of art as just being graphics or drawings or paintings, right? But we can also do that for music. And that's precisely what Gawky has here, a whole bunch of artistic original RuneScape compositions here. And we're just going to have a listen to some of these right now. That piece was called Memories of the Narngun, which of course is Guthix's original people. The next piece I'd like to showcase is Rav's Last Goodbye. And the final piece I'll showcase is the God Wars Epic Orchestral War composition. This one's really interesting. And that was Gawky's epic orchestral war composition, goes on for about another 2 minutes or so. So there's right there three original pieces of RuneScape music composed by Gawky, who you could nominate if you so choose to as one of the best new RuneScape 3 artists. And the third one that we'll highlight is another in the best new artist category, Chaos Elemental, or otherwise known as Probably Writing on Twitter, who has written a, and you guys ready for this? Who has written a 140,000 word project telling their story on what the World Guardian is and what the World Guardian has got up to in RuneScape so far. So that's effectively a novel right there. So there's three very good choices if you guys are looking for people who you want to nominate. Two for the best new artist and one for best artist and best cosplay. So if you want to see any of these or listen to any of these again, just check them out in our show notes at update.rsmaybe.com. So that's who I'm going to be nominating. If you guys want to, feel free as well.
Right on.
And, you know, as we mentioned, everybody always focuses on the video, but I think focusing on the art side of it is something that's really going to go a little bit further to just add a little bit of extra spice into the Golden Gnomes.
For sure. And I mean, this may be the first time I've ever heard of a writer.
Or even a musical composer for Golden Gnome, right?
Yeah. Me too. That was beautiful to listen to. Like, really just great. I'm going to do some more research about this. I would have never known about this had I not listened to this just now.
Yeah. And links to all of these people you can find in our show notes at update.rsbnb.com. So give them a follow, give them a nomination, and we'll see what happens when the Golden Gnomes take flight. I think they're doing them in October this time. Let's see. When are you doing these, Jagex? October 4th is when the voting phase closes, and the Golden Gnomes Awards live stream will take place on Saturday, November 7th. So, November. Alrighty then. That's it for RS stuff this week. We're going to move on and wrap this show, but before we do that, I'll just take a moment to thank our Patreon supporters for this episode. This week, I'd like to thank Brock H., Cameron, Cass, CGB900, Christian S., Diana, Duramax, Jade Gizmo, JW, James W., Jason S., Joe M., John P., Kyle, Mr. Ling, Nora, Rastafa, Samantha R., Stabby Eve, a new arrival, welcome aboard, The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V., and Zant. Thank you all of you for your support. It truly does mean the world to us. And in case you're wondering what this is all about, this is about our Patreon, where you can support the podcast if you choose to at patreon.com/rsbnb. For as little as a dollar a month, you get a special mention in our show notes and early access to our show notes, as well as, of course, funding the cost for hosting and production of RSBNB Update. For $3 a month, you'll get a special VIP rank and a special mention at the start of the month and access to high-quality stereo AAC versions of the show if you want to hear those audio samples that we played in full fidelity there. And for $5 a month, you'll get a shout-out each and every week and gain exclusive access to the outtakes that we use to make the clip show at the end of the year. And in case you're wondering what else we do our monthly bit. We just put one out last week on Old School, which was absolutely fun to record. So if you think you're going to find that interesting, or any of the other 23 or so monthly bits that we've done, just check all those out for as little as a dollar a month. We also do Inside RSBNB Update, which is an interview with one of our hosts or producers, and just take a bit of an inside look at how they do RSBNB Update and what they feel about our operation here. Then, of course, we have the Roundtable, which we hosted last weekend during Double XP Live. We had a bit of a brief discussion on Double XP, Desperate Measures, and what was going to be coming in game going forward. And, of course, Movie Night, which this month will be chosen by Earth. Time, date, and movie for that will all be posted on patreon.com/rsbnb. And, you know, in talking to him, I think he's probably going to choose something like the third Austin Powers movie or White Chicks. So that's likely what we'll be watching with Earth at some point before the month wraps up. But of course, time and date will be posted at patreon.com/rsbnb. That's also where you can learn about so much more of our monthly bits and just support the podcast if you want to take that one step forward and provide just a little bit of enrichment to your RSBNB update experience. So once again, thank you to everybody, and we look forward to seeing what you guys choose for our next monthly bit. That old school one was fun. Thanks so much, everyone.
Thanks, everybody.
All right. We have two questions this week. First one is from Mr. Ling. What would be the best in-slot weapons for each style to have in the new amulet? And what would be a budget option for those who can't afford the expensive stuff? And we'll turn this over to you, David. Best in-slot for each style.
Yeah, so I think we already talked a lot about both Magic and Melee. Fortunately, the best in-slot for both Magic and Melee are pretty cheap. So Dragon, Weapon of Choice, or Guthic Staff. For ranged, however, a little more expensive, I would say best in slot probably Eldritch Crossbow, because you can use the Eldritch Crossbow and utilize that with other weapons. So, like, you could use your Eldritch Crossbow spec and then SGB spec or something like that. Budget option, though, is Magic Longbows are actually really solid. In certain cases, Dark Bows are really good. There's definitely going to be some really cool record-setting videos with the Dark Bow special, because that thing hits like a truck, but it's a lot of adrenaline. So I would say Guthic Staff for Magic, Dragon Weapon of Choice, either Dragon Dagger, Dragon Longsword, or Dragon Mace. My preference is Dragon Dagger, but I think you can make good arguments for the other two. And Magic Longbow. And a Magic Longbow is, of course, like close to nothing. I would say those, that would be the best, your best bet for each of the three styles.
Yeah, and you know, the magic one is also, it's really interesting because the way you put this out, your best in slot for Magic and Melee is the same as the budget option.
Yes, it is. Yeah. And for range, the Eldritch Crossbow thing is so insignificant that even people with just like huge amounts of money, I just think it's silly. I think a Magic Longbow is a perfectly good selection. And I think those are what, 2K at most, 1K?
Yeah.
500 GP, basically free, right? So yeah, I think in this case, high upfront cost, but then incredibly cheap upkeep.
And you know, here I was thinking we'd be seeing things like a Zaros Godsword or a Saren Godbow or a Stadius Warhammer.
I was wrong about that.
No, well, Stadius Warhammer is a different case. That's a money saver because they're like 400 mil, and having a second amulet with your Stadius Warhammer is actually a cost saver because you use your Stadius Warhammer like normal. When it gets to 2-3% charge, pop it into one of the amulets, and now you have infinite special attacks for life. I didn't mention this earlier, Shane. I'm sorry about that. But something interesting about this is it makes it so instead of having to choose whether it's worth the cost to use a Stadius Warhammer, now you ought to use it constantly all the time because it's essentially free after you've bought one of them. Because you just put it in it's not free because it costs the price of an amulet.
Yeah.
But nowadays, once you buy your second amulet for your hammer, you could just literally hammer spec everywhere all the time, constantly. Like I'm going to be hammer specking Telos at 100 in rage, which I would never have done before because it costs so much. Or like at Yakamaru, I'm going to be hammer specking constantly. Because why wouldn't I? It's now no longer a cost. Which is another form of power creep in of itself.
Neat. What is the Eldritch special attack anyways? I'm not familiar with that one.
It changes Soul Split from healing you to increasing damage, but it only works while you're wielding it. So you can now put the Eldritch Crossbow in the amulet, use the spec, and not have to be using the Eldritch Crossbow. So you could either be using Blightbound Crossbows or the Saren Godbow effect.
Nice. All right.
Yeah. But I wouldn't worry about that too much. If you got a...
Yeah. And you know what's really interesting about this? And I think this will be the last thing I say on this episode. I remember when EOC came out, people were always saying, oh, our special attacks that we had before, you know, kind of useless.
And they were. And they keep every... It seems like every 6 months since the EOC...
Say again, you broke up there.
And I'm just agreeing with you that was the case, and now they're back. Dragon weapons are back. I mean, that's kind of nostalgic.
It was cool
being able to use a dragon dagger again. I found that to be really fun.
I'm telling you, it's weapon diversity. Right? The simplest solution.
Yeah. I mean, it is.
There's a choice to the weapon that you're going to use now.
It is in a way. And they're really truly are advantages and disadvantages to different choices among the different dragon special attacks. And I think that's really fun. And a really fun addition to PVM. I really like it.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Ling, for that question. I'm glad we got to summarize which weapons we'd wind up using there for that. Next one from Sunset Fish, a journey with nostalgia out of the ever-expanding RuneScape playlist. What are some of your favorite tunes, and what memories do they evoke when you listen to them? Also, do you own the official soundtrack on CD or vinyl? I would have bought it if my favorite classic tune, Long Way Home, was included. Ah. I have it on CD. You know, I think some of my, and you know, I'm going to just have to say, you know, go through some of the, I think, stereotypical favorites on this. Born to Do This Too is good. I forget the name of it. I got to look at the jacket to find out what it is. But, you know, one thing I think you really can never go wrong with is Newbie Melody. I think that's classic. Probably one of the top three. What do you guys think?
My favorite, I don't know if it's on the album, although I didn't know it was on vinyl. I'm going to have to buy it now that I know.
Oh, you collect the vinyls?
I've gotten into vinyl lately. When quarantine started, that I decided that was going to be my like retail therapy hobby was getting into vinyl. I'm sure that sounds silly, but, you know, it's made me happy. So I've been doing that, but my favorite all time soundtrack is the one that plays in Barbarian Village, because it's just very nostalgic for me for when I was a very young kid and hearing that for the first time.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, I really connected with it, and I just like get really happy when I hear it.
What's it called? Do you know?
I'll look it up right now.
All right. Another one on my list is A Hero's Return. That's an ad. We don't want that. Sorry about that, folks. That was a bit disconcerting there. Tanis, how about you?
So, I mean, I'm always going to be partial to the track that we heard in Lumbridge when he got dumped out from Totoro Island.
Yeah.
Because it's just burned in your head. But I think the other thing, for me, a lot of gaming like tracks that I find memorable or like from their themes, so like, you know, that kind of 8-bit kind of style, pre-orchestra
right.
style that we used to have on the old RS2
yeah.
login screen. I love that because it just reminds
takes you back
of, yeah
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 yeah.
I mean, and I love the new orchestral stuff yeah. too, like I do, but there's something about that
here's
like,
one ah. here it is, A Hero's Return. I found it. And you know, the interesting thing is about all these orchestral pieces, we heard these at RuneFest 2018, played live.
That would have been
That's
cool.
It's beautiful. It's like Lord of the Rings sounding.
Yeah, and you know the only downside of it is, of course, it was playing in a convention hall, which isn't the, you know, best place to play this kind of music, but it was good enough. So
the track I was referring to, it's called Barbarianism. I'm not sure if it's on the original soundtrack classics, but
I don't know
that one's my favorite.
I'll have a look about that. And you know, one really good thing about what Jagex does with all their music, it is released on the original soundtrack classics disc. So
that's awesome.
Pick that up. They don't hit people with DMCA takedowns who use these musics. Oh yeah. Like, we've all heard this one, but I didn't know what the name was, of course.
That was the first time I remember. That's like one of my first RuneScape memories was going to the Barbarian Village. And I just thought that soundtrack was amazing.
Good and, stuff. You know, while we're on the topic of soundtracks, the Desperate Measures soundtrack is out. 13 tracks available on Spotify and all of the music streaming services out there. So if you enjoyed Desperate Measures and you want to hear some of the exact tracks that we heard during that quest, you can find those on your favorite music streaming service now. It doesn't appear to be on YouTube Music yet, but it's definitely on Spotify and Apple Music. So, and you know, of course, Mod Raven's favorite one was in there, his Take Over the World theme as well. So, and you know, the fact they're putting out all these on CD and then they're letting content creators use these royalty free is just excellent. Whereas, you know, you look at some other game companies out there, they will DMCA you if you use their game music on their videos. And it's just so nice that Jagex doesn't do that. So thank you for that question, Sunset Fish. I'm glad we all got to have a bit of a chat about what we enjoy hearing from the RuneScape soundtracks when we pop them open. So thank you for that. And if anybody else wants to send questions in, you can do that by emailing questions@rsbnb.com. You can also leave them on Twitter by sending us a DM or just at mentioning us, or you can post on the forums Monday or Tuesday of each week. Just visit update.rsmovie.com/ask. All right, we're going to wrap the show up now, but just talking about our Double XP Live Skill of the Months, we have, you know, not much action in the Herblore Skill of the Month because, you know, I don't think people want to spend money. Unknown Raptoid won that one with 553k Herblore XP gain. Nobody else wanted to spend money there. And then in the Slayer contest, Unknown Raptoid blew away the competition with 11.2 million Slayer XP.
Nice. Way to go, buddy.
So congratulations. And
did a clean sweep.
And of course, we have double XP achievements as well. So I'll start us off. Starting on August 19th, we have Diapolo 10 with 120 invention, Doc Hawk with 99 cooking, Mike Strike 3 with 99 fishing. Then on the 17th, we have Chief Steak with 120 farming. That is Brad, our former co-host of RSBNB Update from way back when, has made a return to the game and got 120 farming. Amazing to see that. We also have Isthmus with 120 invention also on the 17th, Jammy Jenny with 99 fire making, New Hero with 99 Archaeology, and then Nithirios with 99 Constitution, Attack, and Slayer on the 17th. Then we have Schnetz with 99 Ranged, Spartacus with 120 Invention, Wang Xing with 120 Farming on the 17th. Then moving on to the 16th, we have Ali the Wise with 99 Invention, Bird is the Man with 99 Attack, Dog says FTW with 99 Hunter on the 16th, Jade Gizmo with 120 Cookie on the 16th, and Jag3 Dagster with 99 Smithing on the 16th.
Brief, Shane. All right. Then
on August 16th, we have Sergeant Smart with 99 mining. We have T-Mac 187 with 99 strength. We have Tiz Talk Rex with 120 Slayer on August 16th. We have X-Blades with 120 Archaeology on the 16th. We have Birdishmon with 99 Summoning on August 15th. Birdishmon with 99 Herblore on August 15th. We have Corte with 99 Divination on August 15th. We have Dom the Mexican with 99 Divination on the 15th. We have Arendelle 120 with 99 Hunter on August 15th. We have Ferox Kratos. Rox Kratos with 99 fire making on August 15th. For a second I thought it said Honduras. It does not. Honduras with 99 constitution on August 15th. Let's see. Isarap with 120 farming on August 15th. Nice. Spartezcus with 99 Slayer on August 15th. We have the Taffing Spy with 99 Woodcutting on August 15th. We have Ollie the Wise with 99 Agility on August 14th. We have Corte with 99 Prayer on August 14th. We have Deltar Polo with 99 Farming on August 14th. We have Ferox Kratos with 99 Crafting on August 14th. It's a wrap with 99 Archaeology on August 14th. Lord Dusty with 120 Smithing on August 14th. We have Mike Strike 3 with 99 Smithing on August 14th. We have Seth E. Roth with 99 Divination on August 14th. We have Skater Dan Man with 99 magic on August 14th. Skater Dan Man again with 99 Dungeoneering on August
14th. Oh, so he did. So he did. He did do what he was going to do. He said he was going to do after that bit.
He sure did. Let's see. And then we have the Lion with 120 prayer on August 14th.
So V-Nightshade's got 200 mil magic on August 14th. V-Nightshade got 99 fletching on the 14th. V-Nightshade got 99 attack on the 14th. V-Nightshade got 99 smithing on the 14th. 99 strength on the 14th. 99 fire making on the 14th. 99 hunter on the 14th. And 99 ranged on the 14th. So big day for V-Nightshade. Vivian achieved 99 Herblore on the 14th. Ali the Wise got 99 Construction on August 13th. Ali the Wise also got 120 Dungeoneering on August 13th. Arcane got 120 Construction on August 13th. Bulbazard, 99 Hunter on August 13th. Doc Hawk, 99 Divination on August 13th. Arendelle, 20, achieved 99 Fletching on August 13th. For Ferox Kratos, 99 Hunter on August 13th. Jaggy Dagster with 99 Cooking on August 13th. And Jammy Jenny with 99 Construction on August 13th.
Nicely done, everyone. Big, big boatload of achievements. Very successful all around. I just love seeing these achievements. And I think we've made a point that we always like reading these out, even if it takes a while on Double XP Weekend, just because it's the proper thing to do for our community here. All right. Pick of the week. I believe this is a joint pick of the week by the both of you, so I'll let you take the lead.
So my pick of the week is the Cardi B and Megan Thee Stallion song WAP. I'm not going to say on the show what Cardi B thinks that WAP stands for. Some alternative thoughts. Worship and Prayer, which is a great one. My favorite Facebook/Instagram meme of the week was a guy who told his dad, who's a pastor, that WAP meant worship and prayer. And the pastor opened his sermon by declaring his need for WAP that day and how everyone in the congregation should seek WAP in their spare time. So that was great. There is a Ben Shapiro meme video about it, which is pretty high quality, I thought. I listened to it, Tannis.
Oh, I love it whenever little Benji comes around.
Oh, yeah. I think Women Against Patriarchy is another good phrase for it. So I think that it's an excellent generational defining song. I think that lots of articles will be written about it in an academic context. I'm sure that it's already in progress. It's taken social media by storm. And I've enjoyed watching it. I actually think it's a really catchy, fun song. I think Cardi and Megan Thee Stallion are awesome. I think that what they did was bold, clever, creative, and something that men in the same industry have been doing for years without question. And I feel that the incredible reaction to them doing it demonstrates the difference between the way that society views male and female rappers. And sexuality generally. And I think that we have a lot of progress to keep making. And I think that the conversations brought about by this song have the potential to have a real positive impact. Obviously, there'll be negative implications to it as well. But I think generally speaking, a lot of good conversations are going to happen as a result of it, or at least I'm trying to think optimistically and positively, given that 2020 has been a rough year. And so I would like to think that a lot of good will come from it. And even if nothing good comes from it, it's a catchy song. It's fun.
I've had wonderful conversations about it.
I'm sure you have. And the remixes are going to be fire. I mean, the number of memes that have been produced by this song is just enormous. So that's just wonderful. So WAP, WAP, WAP.
And she's even, she's interviewed Bernie and Biden. And I mean, Cardi is in the popular, what is it, zeitgeist now? Like it's
totally the Cardi bopping at a Lakers game gif in the red. I don't know if you've seen that one, Tannis, but like Cardi B is like bopping to a song at a Lakers game. It's like a ubiquitous gif for me.
Okay.
She just knows how to have a good time, you know? She knows how to have a good time. And I think that's something that a lot of us are seeking right now, is kind of remembering how to have a good time. So throw on WAP and relax and either laugh or guffaw or whatever. But whatever reaction is, have fun with it.
I would totally play a few seconds of this on the show, but I don't want to.
Don't do that.
I don't want to get any DMC there, buddy.
Yeah.
And I think we'll just put a we should put a parental not safe for work note.
Don't play this at a job that you are interested in keeping. Although if you want to like get fired with a bang, blast it on the loudspeakers at work.
I mean, if you work at like the church gift shop or you know, it's got to be the right setting.
Yeah. If you blast this at like an Abercrombie and Fitch, it's probably like par for the course. But like, there are some like if you're like in a corporate office or something. Although, does anyone
what about at the DNC?
Ooh, you know what? The
DMC
there's
probably a lot of WAP at the DMC, but I would think it's probably not a good thing.
I think that the DNC would be too afraid of the backlash to the backlash. So I think you could get away with playing WAP at the DNC. So if whoever is in charge of music at the DNC happens to listen to RSBNB, please blast WAP as loud as you can during one of the speeches. Like Biden,
that'll wake Joe up, eh?
Please.
Yeah, and bring him up.
Oh my god! Yeah.
Make sure.
Maybe that should be his intro. What if that's his go-to intro music? Like,
he
is
comes
there
in with a mop and a
him?
Bucket.
Ooh. Yes. Maybe Cardi B could be part of the transition team. Like, could you imagine? Could Cardi B be the White House chief of staff?
Hey, Cardi B's down with the Green New Deal. I mean, I'll take her for something. I don't know what secretary.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Cardi B's got to be an honorary squad member at this point.
Yeah, right. For sure.
I would love that. I think if Biden did that, it would be the most exciting thing that a Democratic candidate for running for major office has done in a long time. It would certainly bring energy, which is something I think a lot of people feel that maybe he could use a little bit of. Yeah. So yeah, maybe Biden just needs a little whap in his life. That's what he's missing. Maybe that's what he's missing.
I think it is. I think so.
And on that note, let's just say thank you for that pick of the week. I can't hold it together now, but
thank you, Shane, for letting us have fun. We appreciate it.
Not a problem. Not a problem. Listener discretion advised, of course. All right. What have we been up to on RS? Let's start with you, Tanis.
I'm back on the archaeology grind. So once I got done with Double XP, Double XP was crazy. So first I started work. I was going to do fishing. And I did that for like, I don't know, a couple of days. I'm like, cooking. That's what it was. So I did like 2 or 3 days of cooking. I'm like, yeah, I'm really bored with this. So I started fishing. Because, you know, that's way better. But for whatever reason, it did work out pretty well. And then I was working on different stuff with the alt. I did Herbalore and Summoning and you name it. I was doing it pretty much on the junior account. So a lot of attack stats. So I got my defense up to 90. And I think I almost had my attack up to 90. So,
very nice. Coming right very along. Nice.
Yeah, it's getting stronger. Yeah, that's about it. Now I'm just back to archaeology hardcore because I feel like I'm getting to a point where we're going to be pushing through here.
Are you going to catch me?
Oh, I don't know if I'm going to catch you, but I did like finally start buying some material, and it makes it go a lot faster.
Yeah.
A lot faster. Yeah.
All right. As for me on Double XP, I didn't use much of it at all. My extent of Double XP was doing around 4,500 or so protean planks at the round table and after the fact. I did not get the pet. You challenged me to do my 4,500 or so protean planks, and I did not get the pet with them.
I'm surprised because you have that kind of luck.
But aside from that, I just have been doing archaeology still. I made a major push last week for 105. I mentioned I was at the spot last week as we were finishing the show. I finished the Everlight mystery after that show. So Everlight is done. Currently just taking it a bit slower right now, doing Tetracompass farming on Zamorak 3 of all things, believe it or not, because I don't have all the artifacts for Red Rum Relics 2 until level 110. And I really didn't want to go down all the way to like the 80s or low 90s for Red Rum Relics 1 on that. But Zamorak 3 is what I've been doing. And I will probably also be buying materials as well, except I'm going to be sourcing mine from the money I make from herb farming, which is absolutely amazing when you think about it. Just the sheer price of toad flax and quorums and whatnot in this day and age. Herb farming is a really, really impressive moneymaker. So I'll be funneling all that money into archaeology, and I feel okay doing that. I'm glad I got to 99 without spending a cent on materials. The only money I spent was on the Maddox, so I'm okay now with the post-99 to start, you know, dipping into that. And as long as it's funded through herb farming, I have no real problem with it. But aside from that, I have some housekeeping stuff to do. I have a lot of stuff. From the last yak track that still needs to be disassembled, which requires divine charges. So I probably need to spend 3 or 4 hours at the divine energy colonies, getting divine energy and just, you know, restocking up on that to make both charges and also porters, because, you know, you need those with archaeology. So it's going to be a bit of housekeeping this weekend, I think. So nice slow after Double XP. How about you, David? What'd you get up to on Double XP?
I just want to point out just for listeners that you can't get pets while using protein items. Just like.
Well, there you go, Tannis. There you go. That's why that didn't happen.
It's a pretty rude challenge. I'm glad that there wasn't much placed on it.
Did you know behind the scenes that that was the case? Tannis, did you know behind the scenes that that was the case?
I plead the fifth.
Oh.
So it makes sense to me that you did not get a pet from your protein flakes. Anyways, I did 120 summoning. I used Fire Titans because I didn't want to spend the money for the Water Talisman one, the Geyser Titans. It was just ridiculous. It was like 6 or 7 hours to go from 99 to 120 at less than 2 GP per XP. So that was cool. And then I mostly did Slayer, and I used the new Slayer Introspection perk, as well as the Slayer 120 cape to basically do as many Ripper Demons as I possibly could, because they're both just ridiculous XP, like between 2.5 and 2.6 mil XP an hour on double XP weekend is what I was getting. And then they're around 30 mil an hour profit just from the contracts alone, which was pretty wild.
Nice.
So that I just did a lot of that. So I made like maybe 600 mil or so just doing Ripper Demons.
And I imagine those aren't very popular to do on double XP.
Hey, Dave.
Honestly, I don't exactly know. If you're going to train Slayer, they're one of the most efficient things to train, but I don't think Slayer's the most popular skill because like Bibles are what you want to do. But I did 120 summoning, so I did one Bible. And then I switched to Slayer.
Still good if you're out of, like, if you don't have to worry about your Bibles, then, I mean, I've done many, many double XP weekends and then Slayer.
Yeah, I think Slayer is fun to do on double XP weekend. It's like, it's right in the middle of the pack in terms of being, how good it is to do, I think.
Alrighty, well, that wraps up this episode of RSBNB Update. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. David, thank you, as per usual, for your insights and thoughts on everything PVM related. I appreciate it. The listeners appreciate it. So thank you so much yet again. And, of course, thank you to all of our listeners who sent in those wonderful questions this week. And, of course, if you want full show notes, you can find those at update.rsbnb.com. In addition to all of those suggestions we have for who to nominate for the Golden Gnome. So if you want to take a browse through those art pieces, the cosplays, the writing, even the music, just check that all out at update.rsbnb.com and nominate those three fine individuals. And of course, you can also subscribe to the podcast on a number of podcast listeners out there, Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, YouTube, practically anything. Just visit update.rsbnb.com/subscribe. So with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Take care, everyone.
See ya.